Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2821. That's scan number 2821. Well, tonight we're going to have Michelle Bless on from Cincinnati, Ohio. And I'm always happy when Michelle and I are on a show together because we so understand each other. And she has so much to offer, so much to offer. And so now tonight she's going to be sharing her story. And her story has a lot of twists and turns, a lot of horrific things in her story, in her life. And I think it's amazing that she's alive today, okay? She is from Cincinnati, Ohio. She's a survivor of severe child abuse, and she's now a minister, a chaplain. She's also a counselor. She's a certified counselor. Yes, she is. And she's here to tell her story. So before we get into it, though, now, I'm not going to read her much of her bio because she's going to tell us all of this and in her own words. But let me get a little bit of the NASCA business out of the way, and then we can get started with the show. And the number here, by the way, is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. You can call in. You can listen. You can be a part of the panel if you want, if we have one. We don't always have a panel lately. I don't know. But people do listen to their computers a lot. So whichever, whatever. The point is she's here, and that makes me happy. Okay. So let me read about the mission statement. Yes, ma'am. She's like my sister. Okay. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, very important, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I want to tell you all about quickly our website, because that's where you can get a tremendous amount of information. Those of you who don't know the website, who are listening maybe for the first time, and I do hand out a lot of cards. There could be a lot of first-time listeners. But it's naasca.org, nasca.org. On that page, you're going to find all different ways you can open up links, and these links are chock full of information, all right? On the left-hand side, it's recovery groups you can become a part of if you want. They're programs. We don't call them groups. They're programs. And then all the way over to the other side, it actually is for prevention, intervention, and recovery. It gives you a lot of information as to how you can speak to your children, what to say, what not to say. And in the intervention part, if your child has been abused, how to stay calm and get, you know, questions and information from them. And then, of course, report it to the proper authorities and take your daughter or your son to the hospital, have them have an examination. et cetera. There's just so much, so much. And we have some legal things and we have everything else. All right. So that's NAASCA.org. I just want you to know that when I do my presentations, and it's going to start up again, I think things are going to start going back a little bit to normal, maybe not, I don't know. But if the universities are open or whatever, churches, I do it there too. None of the Zoom stuff, I want face-to-face, okay? I get a lot of my information right off of our website. That's how good it is. And it also has videos. So it offers an awful lot of things, okay? So anyway, okay, I have said enough. What I want now is to turn this over to Michelle. And I want her to start to tell her story and in her way. And I'm going to stop her from time to time. We do tell our stories in chronological order. That means, you know, by age. What was your, like, your first remembrance of abuse, and we work from there. And then at the very end of the story, what we do is we talk about what, you know, our guest is doing today, all right, and how they're doing and what they're doing. So it's a full show, and please do call in if you want to ask Michelle questions or if you just want to listen through your computer. But the number one more time is 646-595-2118. Okay. By the way, I'm Carol Levine, and I'm Vice President of NASCA. And to me, Michelle Bless is a very special person. I've known her for years. And to have her telling her story is I don't want to call it a treat because it's not a treat. it's going to be eye-opening. Let's put it that way, okay? All right, Michelle, you go ahead and you start. Go ahead.
Well, first, I want to thank you for allowing me to be here. I invited a lot of people from Facebook, so Michelle is my middle name, so you guys know me on Facebook as Frances, so it's me. Let's start with when was the first time I have a memory of abuse as a child. As far as actually feeling abuse or seeing it. And unfortunately for me, it was both. My first memory, I have to say, was start at the age of 2 years old. Seeing abuse was watching my dad beat on my mom and my siblings and myself. And also physically experiencing abuse. My dad, the abuse I got from the immediate home was mental, emotional, and absolutely physical. I remember at the age of two, my first recollection was I was wearing a onesie, and I remember that my dad was in the family room and he was watching TV. And my mom had took him breakfast on a tray. And I remember running up to him, behind him, and I put my arms around him. And he reached from behind his back and he said, "You B, what are you doing?" You know, and he grabbed me and he threw me in front of him at the wall. And I remember I hit the wall and I slid down. That was my first memory of abuse physically. It escalated of constant emotional abuse, you know, watching him beat my mom and talk down to her, call her all kinds of names and stuff like that. And I never could really I couldn't understand that because my mom was a homebody. I mean, she was a housewife. Like, she didn't do anything. She didn't go anywhere, you know, but took care of home, you know, took care of us kids, took care of my dad. And my dad was really, really absolutely abusive. Like, his words were cut, you know. And he ran the house with an iron fist, like Hitler. And I'm sure everybody knows who Hitler is. Well, he was worse than Hitler, you know. I remember constant abuse of, and I would say from the age of 2 to 6 years old, well, 2 to 5 years old, let's start there. My dad had an after-hour club in our home down in the basement. And I remember it was constantly dancing and drinking, you know, from the customers and his friends that would be there every night. And it got to the point where I remember when I was probably about 3 or 4, I would sneak down and I would just start grabbing cups that was left, and it would had liquid in it, which we know now today as alcohol. And I used to watch the people would drink and laugh and fall down, you know, staggering. And they would, you know, and sometimes they would hurt themselves and would get up, and it was like they don't even feel anything. So I'm like, well, whatever that is, I want some, so I won't feel any of the pain that was put on me from my dad. So I would go around and pick up the cups and got the drinking, and oh, I would gag, and it was strong. But the next day, I got so used to doing it. And then, like, whenever my dad would hit me or grab me and throw me or whatever, I didn't feel anything. So I knew that what was in those cups was like magic. It was like, okay, I need to keep drinking these cups, you know. And then I remember, so that went on for years, you know, of going down the basement, drinking. So I began drinking alcohol at the age of 4 years old, and I was absolutely addicted to it. It got to the point where it didn't burn anymore because alcohol would burn my throat, and it didn't burn anymore. I got used to it. So I started getting numb, you know. So when I got to be 6 years old, and I keep in mind the mental, emotional, and physical abuse was going on, by the time I got 6, we started going to my grandparents' house, and we would go there every weekend and stay, and then also in the summertime. And that's when the sexual abuse began with my grandfather. He groomed me. It started very slowly. It wasn't penetration at the actual beginning of it. It was more so a lot of touching and feeling, and him telling me to touch and feel on him, and he would kiss me and put his tongue in my mouth, and I thought it was so disgusting. And I remember how he would look at my little sister, and remember, I'm 6 years old, so my sister at the time, because she wasn't born then when I was 2, so I was 6, and she was, I want to say at that time, 2. And I remember how he would look at her in certain ways, and I would treat her like a doll. Like everywhere I go, when I was at my grandparents' house, I would have her, like, literally picking her up and having her with me. I never would let her be away from me. And it was just that instant. Some people ask me, well, how did you know what to do that? I can't explain that. I just felt like I needed to protect my sister, you know. And by the time I got to be 7, 8, and 9, it was absolutely full-blown sexual abuse from my grandfather. And I never said anything because I remember he would say, like, you know, well, if you tell, you know, you ain't going to be able to come and visit your grandmother. He never would mention him because he knew that I love my mima, you know. And he would say, well, if you say anything, you know, then they going to take your dad away, you know, and then you won't be able to see your mima no more, you know, or stuff like that. And I couldn't put two together. I couldn't think to say, well, let me tell my dad and my dad will kill him or something. That didn't cross my mind. I felt like, because I was so being badly physically abused at home, that even though my grandfather was doing the things he was doing when I was at my grandparents, I felt like it was just a moment thing, because it was like going to grandparents' house was like going to King's Island. It was just so totally different than being at home, because home was really gloom and doom and darkness and miserable. And it wasn't like that at my grandparents, except when that moment of the abuse had happened. And like I said, when I kept saying, like, okay, this is just a moment, it would be like a moment. By the time I got to be 9 or 10 years old, it had got to the point where I would literally see, I'd be standing at the door. This might sound weird to somebody, but I'm just being real. Like, my spirit, like, I would be standing at the door, and I'd be looking at my grandfather, watching him do the things that he do to me. By the time I got to be 12, I was full-blown in the occult because my grandpa was a devil worshiper, and they used to do seances and do all kind of stuff in the barn, you know, behind the house. And my grandparents lived out in Blue Ash in the country, so they had a farm. You know, they had horses, cows, and sheep and stuff like that, and chickens, you know, and stuff. And that was really, really a dark thing for me. Very, very scary, because I was already living in fear. Understand that I was still being abused at home by my dad. And then I'm going to grandma's house, and, you know, and then I'm in another situation that I sort of, like, adapted myself to deal with, because as long as it wasn't happening to any of my other siblings, I was okay with dealing with it. And I never forget this one day. My grandma, she was getting drunk, and she was an alcoholic, but she was a functional alcoholic, you know. And I remember her about to doze off, and I'm like, Mima, don't go to sleep. She's like, oh, girl, I'll talk to you when I wake up, and she went to sleep. And it was like instantly, like my grandpa would know that she was asleep. He was upstairs. It was like as soon as she was gone, then he'll call my name.
Yeah.
And that was a usual thing happening from the age of 6. But this particular year when I was 12, now keep in mind, every summer or every weekend, it was always he would call me. I would come upstairs. I'd do whatever you wanted to do and get it over with so I can get back to my sister. This one particular time, I was 12 years old, and he called my name, and as I was coming, he said, bring your sister. And so it was like my heart just dropped, you know. And so I remember my sister looked at me, and she said, oh, Grandpa want me. I said, you stay right here. I said, I put all the dolls around her. I said, you ain't going nowhere. You stay right here. I'll be back, okay? She said, okay. And I ran upstairs, and I said, Grandpa, I'll do whatever you want. I'll do what you like. I know what you like. Just don't touch her. He was like, you too old. I don't want you no more.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I want your sister. And at that moment, everything changed. All the fear that I had toward this man that I was so afraid of, that fear left. And I stood strong, and I looked at him, and I don't know what he saw when he looked at me, but I remember when I was looking at him, his eyes bulk, and I literally saw fear, and he was so black, he was black than a frying pan. I saw fear came into him. So he definitely saw something. I understand by this time at 12, I was a full pledge in the occult. I was a devil worshiper. I was all those things. And fear had totally left. And I said to him, if you touch my sister, I will kill you dead. I will kill you dead. And then he said, go away, leave him up here. And that was the last time from my grandfather that he hurt me and molested me and stuff. And, you know, and like that started at the age of 6, so it went from 6 to 12 for 6 years. But that was the last time from my grandfather that he ever touched me. Because whatever he saw, it stopped him in his tracks.
Mm-hmm. Hold on a second. I want to talk to you a little bit about something here. You see, that happens a lot in families, Michelle, because the older one, they think that they have to, you know, protect the younger ones, and they'll take the abuse, whether it be physical or whether it be sexual or whatever it might be, and that is to protect the younger one because they know that the younger one cannot protect themselves. Just like
Absolutely.
When you were their age, you couldn't protect yourself either. Okay?
No.
And who could you go to? You see, this is what happens a lot of times in families. But then you have also the occult to deal with. And that is such a horrific, horrific thing. Michelle, people don't realize just how much, you know, occult is out there. And it is my belief. They don't know it. I think it's my belief. I know it's my belief that that's why our world is so screwed up.
I want to add something. Because someone asked me, you know, why did you dealt with that all this time and protect your sister? And I said, well, I remember when it first began on me at the age of 6. It was so painful. I can't describe the words. And people got to understand that, that you need to talk to your children, because us being as a little girl and a little boy, our bodies are so little. You know what I'm saying? Our mind don't know anything about sex. Don't know anything. We don't know nothing about that. So, you know, you being thrown into stuff like this that you have that you're confused about and you don't understand. And then you have a person who's supposed to love you, like a grandfather or whoever have heard of anyone else. I'm talking about my grandfather in this particular time. He was supposed to be my protector, and he's putting this nasty thing in me. It was excruciating. It was horrible. So, and I remember, like, I don't want my sister to experience this. I did not want her to get hurt like that, you know. And I, at that point, hated men and hated sex, or whatever it was called, whatever was going on with me, I didn't like it. And it affected me when I got older, but that's in another part of the story we'll talk later about, but...
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, it's very understandable.
I'm healed today, but I mean, at that time, yes, it was like, oh, God. I want to mention one more thing that came to my thought, too, this particular time. So when I was 12 years old, and the last time my grandfather, he was afraid. He saw, I don't know what he saw, but he did not mess with me anymore. And I was definitely totally in full groom of the occult and with these people that were practicing voodoo and stuff like that and the tarot cards. And I mean, I was in full blown of it. And I remember I was at home and something happened that allegedly I have done. And my dad said, B, go upstairs. You know, it was never Michelle. It was never my first name, friend. That's what I was known as, a B. And that's why he would call my mom, you know, but he never called my little sister that. You know what I'm saying? And this is my dad now. So I remember something happened. I was accused of something, and I didn't do it, but I got accused of it. And something just came to my thought. When I got accused of this, my siblings felt like, well, let's say it's her, and she'll take it anyway. And let me tell you why they did that. Because throughout our childhood, whenever things happened, whether it was my brothers or whatever, I would say I did it so I can take the punishment and they don't get hurt.
Right.
Because it was real hard for them to get beaten. It was hard. So I took a lot of beatings for them, too, on top of my own beatings. You know what I'm saying? So this one particular day I got accused of something. And I heard my dad say, B, go upstairs and turn the water on. You know what to do. So let me explain what he meant by that. So when any time, and I was the only one that was going through this torment. My brothers or my sister had never experienced this. And it's called the cold tub. And what the cold tub is, without him saying it, because I was trained to do what he told me to do, and that is to go upstairs and you take this little circle thing, this little pluggy we put down in the tub, plug it up, and then first, before you do that, you turn the water on and let the cold water get icy cold. And back then, I mean, when you turn on cold water, it was cold. When you turn on hot water, it was hot. You know what I'm saying back then? So after I let the water run for a while, then I put the plug in so the tub filled up with water. And you can see the coldness, the distinct coming off the water. You can see it. It is, you know. And it was cold. Keep in mind, this started on me, though. I was so used to that. So I was, my body was immune to it. So I had to strip naked, stand next to the tub, and attention. And so then I would hear my dad come up the stairs, and it's these boots that he wear, and it made this sound. It was a terrifying, horrific sound. You know, I just totally went numb. And at this time, I got caught off guard. I didn't get an opportunity to run down the basement to have a drink. So I was not numbed. And so he came upstairs, and then he said, step in, get in the water. So I sat and got in the water, and then my dad grabbed the top of my head, And then he reached, and then he pulled me up. And then when he pulled me up in the air, then he grabbed my ankles, both of them, put them together, and dropped me upside down. And he had me up in the air, and he had a switch, and he was switching. And, well, he dunked me in and out of the water. And then when he got tired of doing that, then he took a switch. He got me wet, and he started switching my body from head to toe. I don't know how long that lasted. I remember screaming because I wasn't numb. And so, and I'm looking down, and before I passed out, I saw the water was red, and then that's all I remember.
Yeah.
And then he dropped me in the water and left. And so, and then I heard my mom crying. See, we weren't allowed to move or anything. Wherever he was in the house, we had to stand at attention. So when he finally left the house, my mother ran upstairs screaming, grabbed me. She laid a towel on the floor, and she laid me down. And she put these – now, it would look like – the only way I can describe it to you is like, you know how you take oh, my God, what is it called? Oh, well, grease. You know how you just take regular grease, you know? But it was this stuff that because my mom was from Kingston, Jamaica, so it was like 22 of them, you know? And, you know, my grandma was living with us on my mom's side, her mother. And so they had this stuff that was home remedy stuff, and she was rubbing it all over my body. And I remember it was burning, and she was crying. She kept saying, I know it burned, but you're going to be okay. Your body's going to be healed. And I passed out several times because I had open wounds all over my body from head to toe. My dad had beat me so bad, like he didn't even care. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah.
When I came to, I was in bed. My grandma, which is my mother's mother, was on one side and my mother on the other, and they were praying and talking. And I came to, and I remember saying to my mom, why won't you take us away from him? Why won't you take us away? You know, and she would rub my head and say, it's going to be all right. And then I remember hearing my grandma said, I'm going to kill that. You know what, one day I'm going to kill them, but it never happened. So that was the one experience that I remember so much in detail called the cold tub. It happened so many times. All the rest of the times I got used to it, I was ready. I was numb. I started getting back then it was like bottles of popping out of Coke, and I was save the top, and then when I go downstairs in the basement at the bar, and I'll pour liquor in it, and I'll put the top, push it down, my hands will get cut. But I would take it into my room, and I would hide it. So whenever I got in trouble, my dad said, bring your butt here, B, or whatever, you know, I would run in my room and get a gulp of alcohol. And so that was my life as a kid.
That's terrible, Michelle. That's terrible.
Yeah. So... And then And then my dad, you know, I got hit in the head with a hammer, frying pan. I got hit with the end of a gun, but I got beaten in my face with a gun, pistol, broomsticks. I got thrown against walls. I was locked in closets for hours, sometimes days. And then it just, you know, that was my life. And I meant to mention something. My dad got me into modeling when I was 6 years old and back in the 60s, you know. And he was good at being a manager. He got me great jobs, you know. And he always had me thinking that he was saving this money for me. My dad was spending that money. He was an alcoholic at the time. He was a gambler, so. He was just using me for profit. You know, I didn't know it. I didn't find out until after I got in the military what happened, but because my mom finally told me. But so, you know, dealing with that, my dad would never – I brought that up to say my dad stopped putting marks on my face because one day we had a shooting and my face was so messed up, you know, and they were trying to put makeup on me, but it wouldn't hide it. And so the person that had booked us was upset. He was like, I can't use her. And it was like, and my dad was like, oh, no, we'll put some makeup. She fell. Ain't that right, girl? Didn't you fall? I'm like, yeah, I fell. And they looked at my dad one way like, because he made it sound like I fell on my way here, but they can tell, like, it didn't happen, like, on my way here. And
they couldn't use me
for a particular project that day or shoot, and he was very upset because that was his money. So, but guess what? I'm glad that happened because he stopped beating me in my face.
Mm.
You know, so he would just beat me, you know, neck down. You know, I wear long, if I'm wearing longs, he'll make sure to find out if I had a shoe, what she got to wear that day. And then if they say that I'm wearing short sleeves, he won't hit my arms. You know, if I'm wearing pants or jeans, he'll beat my legs. Oh, that was just the way it was. And I would tell people, they say, oh, so your dad will whoop you. Well, first of all, I ain't never experienced a whooping because we ain't never had no whoop. I ain't never had a whooping. I had beatings. I can tell you about beatings, but I ain't never had a spanking or a whooping. I don't know what that is because I never had that before. You know, I would get beat unconscious. My dad would hit me like a man, you know, like with four fists, knock me straight out. And, you know, and I tell people, you know, I mean, today, being the person I am today, I know that I'm an absolute miracle, you know, because I remember I don't have so many black eyes, broken nose, cracked ribs, teeth knocked out. God gave me all my teeth back. I don't wear false teeth. I said, but all my teeth. But it was like, how is this possible? This is not normal, you know, but it's not humanly possible. But of course it's not humanly possible. It's because of the grace and mercy of God, which I would talk about that later down in another segment. But, yeah, so I never knew what spankings or whoopings was because I never experienced that. I'm going to move a little ahead real quick. Like, so at 12, you know, my grandfather no longer sexually abused me. He was afraid to touch me. And so I had two uncles on my dad's side was messing with me. They did not it was a certain things they didn't do, but it was certain things they did do. So it picked up there. And it wasn't it picked up at with two uncles and a cousin. So that went on all the way up until I was 15 years old. And by this time, I was in total depression. I had different journals that I had wrote right in. And I would always contemplate suicide. I wanted to die. It's like, and I would like, when I plan stuff, like I'm gonna go walk, I'm gonna walk in the street to get hit by a car. And it's like, I walk in the street and cars will swerve around me. Like, why is this happening? Why y'all won't kill me? I was like looking for death, and death wouldn't take me out, you know.
Right.
So at this point, from the age of 12, my life, my mental state was death. I did not want to live, and I didn't care about life anymore at that point. I had love for people. You know, like I was still that protector over my siblings, the elderly. I would go to it with neighbors, wouldn't let nobody do nothing for them. And during this era, it was very racist and prejudiced, but yet we had Jews and white people. They would only look for me to go to the store for them, and they would give me gifts, and I would sit and listen to them. And I was black, and it was racist, but they loved me. They attached themselves to me, and I always wonder about that. And now looking back, I feel like they knew that I was being abused. That was getting the most abuse, and they felt sorry for me. You know, it was a guy, he lived in a, today I would say $1 million house, because it was one of the most beautiful homes in that community. And he allowed me to come in. And then he would say, okay, it's time to go, because you always tell me you see things. You know, I be seeing demons, but they were my – now, here's another thing, too. I see spirits all the time, right? So – and I used to talk to spirits. I would see them, and they would talk to me, and I would talk to them. Now, back then, I didn't know what that was, but today, absolutely, it was a devil. But, of course, I didn't know that because I didn't even know who God was. This Jew, man, he started me in collecting – beautiful things. He started me in collecting comic books and stamps and stuff like that, and he started me in that. And so And he was saying, you hide your stuff, you know. And I had already got a hiding place at home, because my hiding place was in dim, dungy places where no one would go because they were scared.
I was
not afraid of the dark, you know. So I was sit in darkness and just sit in darkness, you know. That was my thing. Like horror movies, scary movies was laughable to me. I loved it back then, scary movies. So I was always into the darkness and the dark world, and I drew more and more into it to the point where by the time I turned 15 years old, I put a stop to my two uncles and a cousin no longer were able to cause me any more harm, and I was in full blown of my power. So being a voodoo priest, being a priestess, being a devil worshiper and all that, I used to cast spells. So I would cause harm and made sure they knew it was from me, and they were scared of me. So no one bothered me. And for the last time that my dad put his hand on me as a child, because he put his hand on me as an adult. That's in another segment. We'll talk about that later. But the last time my dad put his hand on me was one day I snapped. I was in the house. And let me say this first before I share that story. It was one time that my dad came in drunk, and he just came in and started wailing on my mom, grabbing her by her hair, beating her, dragging her all up and down the floors in different rooms because she was laying in a pool of blood. And then he left. Then she dragged herself to the table where there was a lamp and a Bible. And when she lifted herself in her tears, she had her head down, and she said, God, please forgive him, for he don't know what he has done.
Oh, excuse
me. And I was like, what?
She was like a saint. She was like a saint.
I was like, what? I put my hands on my hip. I said, Mom, who are you talking to? Oh, honey, I'm talking to God. I'm talking to Jesus, who loves you. What? If this is love, then I need to see hate. He don't
That's
love
right.
me. It was God's plan for me not to want to know who he was then. And I'll tell you about that later on in the segment. But then
okay.
as a child, I didn't want to know anything about God. I didn't want to know anything about Jesus because my mom would sit. My mom was serving the Lord. She wasn't allowed to do anything, but she had her personal intimate relationship with God, and she had her word, which is the Bible. And she would just sit and talk up to God. And I would look at her. And I used to see this light figure, a being. Be like, who is that you talking to? Why is that light over there? And my mom would smile, and she was happy, like, oh, she see a light. Because I was used to darkness and demons. I dwell with them. I knew what looked like. I knew what they smelled like. But I seen this. I didn't want to go nowhere near her because I seen that light. What is that? He said, Jesus, God loves you. He don't love me. He don't love me. Oh, honey, yes, he do. No, he don't love me. And stop saying that name. I'm serious. Like, stop saying that name. I don't want to hear nothing about it. So let's get back to at the last time my dad put his hand on me, which was at 16 years old. I had just turned 16, and I'm on my way to I'm going to the military. I graduated from high school at 15. I excelled so good in school because understand that I lived in nothing but abuse, and so when I leave home to go to school, that was like going to Coney Island or something. Love school.
That's right.
And I got to the part where I excelled so well that I overexcelled, that I graduated early. In the 11th grade, in the first quarter, after I completed the first quarter of the 11th grade, I got my high school diploma.
Wow.
So I thought I was gone, but that was a lie. He said, you ain't up at 15 years old. You still got to do what I said and all this stuff. So one day, I was working at a library, and I was and I ended up being able to go into the military at 16. I did some under-the-table work for a recruiter at the federal building for Navy. And I got an opportunity to meet different recruiters for different branches. And so for that year, I just learned all about the military until I made a decision, this is where I want to go. And so at 16 years old, I never forget, I was sitting, I was doing something, and my dad called my name. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, tell your mammy, not mama, He said, tell your mammy to fix me something to eat. And I snapped. So understand that I'm used to hearing how he talked to my mom from the age of 2. So I'm now 16. And I snapped. Yeah. And I said, Ma? And she said, yeah, girl. I said, your master said, fix him something to eat. And the next thing I knew, because I said it loud for my dad to hear me. And the next thing I knew, because I went in the kitchen, but I said it loud for him to hear me. He was upstairs. We kept hearing falling and stuff. He missed a step. He come running down them steps and came into the front of my face. And he said, you MFB, what did you say? And I said nothing. He went, pow! He balled his fist and hit me fist in my face. And blood was gushing down. I had on a white T-shirt, brand new T-shirt I had bought. And blood came all down out of my nose and mouth, all on the front of my shirt. And he said, I want you to repeat what you said, B. What did you say to your mother? And all of a sudden, this is what Mama said. She said, my head turned around.
Oh, my word. You stood up to him. That's what you did. You stood up to him. He wasn't used to that.
My mama said, my head turned. She ain't never seen nothing like that in my life because my body didn't move. It's my head. And I looked at my dad and I said, Ma, your master said, fix him something to eat. Just like that. My daddy hit me again in my face. And we had this cupboard, but it was a huge cupboard. See, back in the early 60s, you know, you would find, blacks, they would go get a tree trunk. And they would put it in their big, huge walk-in cupboard, and they'll have an axe stuck on it. So that it was made for sharpening stuff.
Right,
but
right.
My dad had the axe upright up. So when he hit me, because I had moved away and went in front of the cupboard. And so when I said what I said, my dad hauled off and full fist and hit me again. But he hit me so hard that I fell backwards. And I fell on the axe. And my mother screamed. She said the name of Jesus. He said, oh, Jesus, the axe, don't let it cut my baby. That's all I remember. I fell back, and the next thing I know, my mother, she got startled because now what I'm about to tell you, I don't remember this. This is what my mom witnessed. She said, I didn't jump up. I just came right back up, and my feet never moved. And she said that my pupils was all black, and my dad, eyes got so big, and he was like, oh, forget this.
No, my God.
He left and ran up the
He was steps. Scared of you by that time. Are you kidding me? This bully.
And my mom,
Go ahead.
My mother came and touched me. And then now I can tell you, this is what I do remember, because she said, what's in you? She said, I rebuke it in the name of Jesus. She said, Mama, stop saying the name of Jesus. I don't want to hear no Jesus. What happened? She said, your eyes turned black. I said, Mom, I can't be here anymore. I'm leaving. And then my mama grabbed me and she said, but life has been easier since you've been here. Since you're older,
geez.
It's like he don't beat me as much. Oh, girl, I lost it right there. My mom said that, oh, my God, I can't leave my mom. One part of me is saying I can't leave my mom, but the other part, Satan had totally took over at that point. I said, Mom, if I don't lose, I'm serious. The demon took over, because this is what I said to my mom, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I said, if I don't leave, I'm going to either kill him or he's going to kill me. But the police is coming and the undertaker with the station wagon, because either me or him is leaving up at two places that somebody's going to. Jail, three places. Jail, the funeral home, or the hospital. And it was a battle because I wanted to stay, and I can literally hear them demons say, stay, stay, because they knew this is what was going to happen. But then this other voice kept saying, leave, leave, and I didn't know who that was, but I kept hearing, leave, you got to go. But now I know today who it was. The Lord told me it was him. I had to leave. So I left, but my mother grabbed me, and she said, but you protect me. So, you know, people always ask me, why, and I'm going to be quiet so you can talk, but people ask me, why you never hated your mom? Because my mom was a victim. I mean, I'm the second oldest, and, you know, my brother would tell me stuff that he saw what was going on. And then by the time I turned two, I started seeing stuff. So my mom was being beaten for a long time, all her life. My mother was a virgin when she met my dad. She came from the virgin, from Kingston, Jamaica. And then when she got pregnant with my brother, she was still in Kingston. And then when he decided to ask her to marry him, she was pregnant with me. And she came to the States, and then he married her. And she didn't go back. So the rest of our story is born.
Let me say a little something here, because you have come out with 10 mouthfuls here. People out there have to understand that, you know, this type of abuse goes on. It's going on today, too. But you see, with you, you became the protector of your family, starting with the childhood, with the children, your brother, your sister, and all this other stuff, and your mother. Mm-hmm. Because as long as he had someone or something to hit, to punch, to torment, and all these other things that he did to you, okay? And then your grandfather, what he was doing.
Or every other day.
I mean, like, you didn't have any life. You were the protector, taking all the abuse, and you weren't living. You were just protecting.
Yes.
And that's a horrific thing for your mama, though. You know, now that's not that. How can I put this? She was safer because of you, but on the other hand, you were being so beaten. I don't know if I could have stood there and watched my child be beaten. I think I probably would have picked up a knife and I would have stabbed him.
She was scared. But let me tell you something. My dad would walk in the house, pissy drunk, and he was like, "Be where you at." He would be calling for her. But I would meet him at the door. I would meet him at the door in his drunken state and push him, which is a no-no. But I push him because he'll go in a rage and beat the crap out of me. And I took the beating so my mother didn't get beat, so my brother didn't get beat. Because my sister never got beat.
That's so unfair to you. That is so unfair. We have a 404 area code, honey. Hold on a second. Are you familiar with the 404 area code?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. This is Carol Levine from the Stop Child Abuse Now show. Are you a friend of Michelle's? Are you calling in to support her, to listen? Or are you, who might be speaking to? You don't want
to
talk? Okay, that's all right. Okay, I'm hearing something. Did you hear him, Michelle? Do you know who this is?
He's trying to talk.
Yes, this is Ken.
Okay, Ken. Okay, all right. I'm glad you're here. This is a horrific, horrific story, okay? There's a lot of people that are probably out there with their heads spinning around themselves, okay, without any help, because, you know, they can't picture this little girl. You know, and I was in a position similar to that at one point in my life, so that's what I'm saying. I know where you're coming from. But, but with you, it happened all of your life, like from the age of like four, say, with their protecting and all this other stuff, and six, and up, and 12, and then 14, and up to 16, and, you know, and, you needed to get out of there, absolutely. You needed to get out of there, absolutely,
So understand
Michelle.
that during the, during this time that, you know how kids, they'll get toys to play with. I never had toys. I my childhood was snatched from me. So I never had a childhood. I never had an opportunity to be a little girl. And on top of all this abuse that was going on at home, then I was an instant babysitter. Like my dad, his brother died, and so his wife, my dad moved his wife, who was my aunt on his side, and her 10,000 children, you know, seven boys and one girl. And he bought a two-family home on each side, and so they can be, because he was helping raising them, and taking care of them, and taking care of his sister, you know. And so Peggy, the only girl, she had seven kids. I'm babysitting her kids, and then the other boys, they had their kids and bring them over to the house, and I'm babysitting. So I never had. So on top of protecting my sister, protecting my siblings, I'm taking care of all these kids. But you know what? It gave me, I didn't mind. I love kids. You know what I'm saying? So right. It was like, and when I was babysitting, that's when my dad didn't do nothing. He cussed me out and called me names, but he didn't hit me because I was watching these kids. The boy, when they wasn't around. And let me explain something. I need to, for people to know this. I got beaten. If it wasn't every day, it was every other day.
Right.
Beginning at the age of 2. Up until I left home, at the last beating at 16. So, I like I said, I never got a whooping. I never got spankings. I got beaten.
There's a difference. There's a difference, Michelle. You see, when we talk about on the show, gee, should I be spanking my children? Is it a bad thing? I've had people ask me, is it a bad thing to spank your child? And I always say, sit your child down if they're old enough. And talk to them as to why you're angry with them and talk it out. It's not good to spank or hit your children ever, ever. Because children, they're not stupid, you know. They have a mind of their own, and they can listen, though. They can understand. If you explain things to children, you don't have to spank them. But what you're talking about.
You can explain things. You can explain things.
Honey, what you're talking about, Michelle.
But wait a minute. But sometimes you can't. Sometimes you might not be able to spare the rod. I don't believe in sparing no rod. If a child need to get spanked, I'd rather see a child get spanked than to get beaten. I just never had that opportunity to ever get a spanking.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
There are some situations where you might.
I mean, like, okay, just to give an example of what I mean. It's like, I remember my daughter was little. My oldest daughter, and she had a habit of wanting to go pull out plugs out, you know, from the wall. And I said, don't do that, you know, and then she'll do it anyway. And so I would take her hand and take it over to the plug. I said, you see this plug? I said, don't pull this out anymore. And I would spank her fingers, you know, tap her fingers and let her know that's a no-no. Sometimes you might have to do that, and that's okay. I just wanted to put that out there, you know. But, no,
yeah,
I don't believe in children being abused. Believe me, I don't have. And that's what I tell people too,
because, you know, if you sit a child down, you know, it makes the bond even stronger between parent and child, and you tell them why, you know, you're angry, and this way you can talk it out. And then you can send them to their room or whatever, but make sure the room doesn't have the TV in it, the radio. Send them to the library if you have one in the house. Send them to the laundry room, someplace that's not fun, all right? Tell them to do the laundry. There you go. You know, and so they have time to think. But you see, what you went through was not the normal of discipline. This isn't even discipline. He was brutal. He was evil himself. And what he did was he punched the hell out of you to the point that you were the punching bag for the whole family. And I'm sitting here and I'm getting mad. Okay. And when I get the chills going up my legs, I know that I'm mad. This is what happens to me. I know that there's evil presence. This is what happens, especially on the left leg. I don't know why, but that's the favorite leg for that to happen. That is evil.
Yeah.
All right? So when you were relating earlier, like to Stalin, say, that was, he worked under Hitler and all this other stuff, those people, yes, they too, they were evil. I mean, how else could you treat people like that unless you're evil, all right? We have evil in this world. And what you're speaking about that came from your own family is evil. That was evil.
It was pure evil.
And your mother, God bless her, but she couldn't expect you to stay and take the punchings anymore for her. I know, I understand things were different back then, Michelle. I understand it. I get it.
It was.
Women stayed home. They stayed home. They took care of the house. And, you know, they took care of the children. And the monstrous husbands, if they're monsters. And a lot of morons.
And you know what? It wasn't no safe house. It wasn't no, the police got called out, honey. And then the police would get called out. And then he'll go up to them, you know, had to keep her in line. It was like, oh, we understand. They would leave. So it was a waste of time calling the police. They didn't do anything, you know.
It was well known
to hit your wife and, you know, to beat your wife, you know. So that movie called Color Purple, you know.
I love that movie.
Okay, remember when the son when the son was Celie, I forgot her name. Oprah played the role of his son's wife, and he said, "I can't," you know. And so Celie was out there, you know, talking to him, and she said, "Beat her," because that's all she knew. That's all she knew.
I know.
So he said, "You gotta beat her." So that was a thing then. You know. So, anyway,
women didn't have a chance back then. You know,
no,
I remember the movie so well. I mean, we had Whoopi Goldberg. Wasn't she? What's her name? I forget. And then you had the heavier set lady. And I remember her eye. I remember her eye was so badly beaten. Yes.
Yes.
And I remember they had they started a bar or something across the river or whatever. And then there was a flashy sister who came in with a tight dress and all this other stuff, and all the guys were looking at her. I remember that red dress. Mm-hmm. I remember the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, back in those days,
that was my mom. My mom would get beat like that, but she got beat worse than what Mr. did.
Yeah.
Her.
And we
couldn't
fight back. And I remember even with my own mother, only one time the police got called, and every night she too was beaten. So
mm-hmm.
I do know a part of what you're saying. Now my father he wasn't my father, but he never touched me until the very last
mm-hmm.
day. And he left for good.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. I remember seeing all of that blood, and there was so much bloodshed. And in the family, too, they were all a bunch of monsters. They were all drunks, alcoholics, and they'd all, you know, they end up fighting. That's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But with the children, now, with my brother, who was turned out to be one of my monsters, now, I didn't know that he was going to be one of my monsters, was going to sexually abuse me when I got a little bit older, and only a little bit older, like 9.
Yeah.
But the kids were making fun of him in school. Now, here I am, 5 years younger than he, and I'm picking up rocks on the outside of the house, the street that we lived on, and I'm throwing them at his enemies,
mm-hmm.
the enemies. Now, this is what we do a lot of times in families. We will protect, all right? And I don't know what kind of relationship you have with your siblings today, but I know what I have, and I walked away because it was too toxic. But
mm-hmm.
women back then did not, they were like, it doesn't matter who you were, it doesn't matter about anything. I mean, we were wealthy people. And still in all, my mother was more in the servant type, if you will, serve me,
mm-hmm.
okay, type of atmosphere. That's the way it was. Women were to be submissive totally to their husbands.
Absolutely.
And when women got beaten up, didn't matter who they were, whether wealthy, poor, in between, whatever, the police didn't help much then. No, they didn't. I remember
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I know what you're talking about with your mother.
Yeah.
I know
the
mentality because I watched it.
She was broken. She was broken. He broke her down.
Yeah.
He broke
yep.
her down. And she was... My mother was a beautiful woman. She's beautiful today, but I'm saying she was so pretty, and he would accuse her. And she wasn't even allowed to go no further than the porch. She wasn't even allowed to come out. And yet he accused her. It was just crazy to me. My dad, I'm going to tell you another incident that happened. This is when I was in elementary school. I had a best friend, but she never knew my last name. And so one day in class, because normally – the teachers were caused by our first name, but we had a substitute that day because our teacher was out sick. And so the substitute decided when she called our name, she didn't call by the first name. She called by the last name. So she said, my last name. And so my best friend looked at me, and she said, I got to talk to you when we get outside on our break, when we had, when you go outside and play. And so I said, okay. So went outside. She was like, my sister boyfriend last name is the last name. And I said, well, what's his first name? She said, my dad's name. And I said, okay. So I played dumb. So I'm like, that's my dad. She said, yeah, he said that he had 5 kids and a maid. So my dad is having an affair with my best friend's sister, and my mother was a maid. And at that point, because I used to look up to my dad, he was my hero. Even during the abuse, he was my hero. But when that happened, my heart turned black. I remember I came home from school, and I was upset. And my mom was like, what's wrong? And I was like, nothing. She said, yes, it is. Something's going on. Something happened in school. And I just bust out crying. And my mama grabbed me. She said, what's wrong? And I told her what happened. And I told her how Ernest, that was my dad's first name. Oh, yes, enough that to say. We were never allowed to call him dad. We had to call him by his first name. And I said, Ernest has been messing around with my best friend's sister, and he calls you a maid, Mom. And my mom started crying, put her head down. And I walked over there, and I lifted her head, and I put her head in my chest, and I held her. And I said, you're the best mom ever. You're nobody's maid. And I remember my mom looked up to me with her tears, and she said, but y'all get beaten. I can't even protect you. And I said, Mom, how can you protect us when you can't even protect you? We're in this together. And one day, we're going to get out of this. And my mom was amazed at my answer, at my response to her. And I just held her while she was crying. So, no, I never blamed my mom because I saw that my mom was battered and abused by a man who was horrible, who happened to be my dad. And it wasn't her fault. He was abusing her. When she started, I would ask her to tell me about their life before she started having any of the kids. And she said he was never like that. Once I got married, that's when everything changed. So, I remember at 16, I wanted to go into the military, even though I had my high school diploma. My dad did not sign. He said, you ain't going nowhere, nigger. That's what he used to call me then. And because I was his moneymaker. Keep in mind, I was making money for my dad. So he didn't want to lose his money. And I remember one day I was so upset. I went in my room. My mom said to me, because my dad left and went to work. And my mom said to me, she said, do you really want to go in the military? And I said, yes, Mom. I need to get away from here. And so my mom told my dad the next day, we're going to the store, and I'll be back. And he said, okay. She can go to the store. We got on the bus and went down to the federal building, and she signed the papers for me to go.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
That's when my life changed. I'll never forget. I was on the plane, and I had some money, and I bought because we were all in our military get up, so they didn't know how old I was. That we was. If they did, they didn't pay no attention. And I remember I kept getting a little bottle of shots that I wanted to be stoned by the time we got there. And I was pissy. I was toe down, but I was functional. And then I forgot that I signed in the military. I woke up, they had these garbage tops, the cans, the tops. They were banging them, waking everybody up. I fell out the bed. I was like, I thought I was at home. Nope. I belong to Uncle Sam that day. But I was like, free at last. Free at last.
But you weren't free, though.
Almighty.
You were free from your father, yes, and that terrible situation.
I was free from my father, my grandfather,
and your grandfather,
my two uncles, and a cousin. And then after 2 years of being in the military, I was in the military strong. I was 16, so 3 years later, my commander groomed me to trust.
Yep.
I trusted him. You know, I told him what was going on, what happened to me when I was at home.
Yep.
When I was 19, I told him. And because I looked at him and admired him, he would tell me how he was going to help me get promoted and stuff like that. And then I woke up. I was in the barracks sleep, and I woke up with him on top of me. He raped me.
So you see, you've got it in the military.
That was the second rape. I had already had a nervous breakdown. The first rape was I was at work. Everybody's supposed to have been gone. The commander came, and I'm like, why are you here? I thought you would be gone with everybody else. And he said, I left some paperwork, and I'm going to catch the next hop. What a hop is, it's like you get to fly for free unless you get bumped by an officer. But he was a commander, so he wasn't going to get bumped. So I was in my drawer looking for something. I was at my desk, and he said, what are you looking for? And I said, I'm looking for some change so I can go buy me a soda pop. That's what they call it down in New Orleans, Louisiana, soda pop. And he said, well, I'll get you one. I'm thirsty myself. So I didn't think nothing of it. You know, I'm sitting there typing. And so he comes back with two pops. They were already open. He sat down. He said, here. He was sipping his. So I was sipping, and that's all I remember. I woke up. I was on a cold floor of the office, with no clothes on, with him on top of me. And when I realized what was happening, my martial arts kicked in, and I picked him up by his neck and had him in the air. They would have waited one more minute, he would have been dead. I snapped, and that was his word against mine. And so this is where instincts kick in. So keep in mind, when he told the MPs, because 6 MPs come running in, and they save him. And so, you know, and I can say he raped me, you know. And I said, I'm going to the hospital. And they said, and he told them, take her to the military hospital. So we're in the Jeep, and I'm an officer, though. So the MPs, I was higher ranked than they was. And I said, before we go to the military hospital, I want to go to a civilian hospital first. And they said, but we got orders from the commander. I said, you got your orders from me. You're going to keep your orders from the commander, and you will take me to the military hospital. But you're taking me to the civilian hospital first. But I understand the guy that I didn't know then kept me to put that in my mind. If I didn't done that, because the civilian hospital, they took the evidence, and they had it stored all that time. I fought against the military 20 years later, and they had no evidence that I was ever raped, according to them, in the military hospital, because, of course, he's a commander, and he had it all set up for it to be erased. But the civilian hospital had the evidence. Mm-hmm. And I found and my attorneys got the evidence, and we sued, and I won. I was one of three women. I was one of the three. We were called the whistleblowers in the military. It's in the icons in CNN, because we were on CNN. It was in 2010 when I won, and they called us the whistleblowers. And so what the devil meant to bad.
I remember that, yes.
That's right. God turned it into good. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember that. I remember the whistleblower. Mm-hmm. I remember that title. I remember
mm-hmm.
that. Now, you see, what people have to understand, all right, now you had a horrific life, okay? And we're going
mm-hmm.
to get into the more things of what you're doing today. But I just want to make it very clear, because I read an article just a few days ago. There's a lot of that going on in the military, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of cover-ups, and there's because of rank and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just is everywhere, Michelle, isn't it? Oh, my God. But
Because of us three women being a whistleblower, today it's easy now to sue and be recognized that this is what happened to you, because they connected you with service connection PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, and MST,
right,
which is military sexual trauma, is what it's called.
Yeah.
And if you can prove it, you can get connected with those connections, and they will have to pay you for it. And so, like I said, when the devil meant for bad, God turned into good. So I am recognized and honored as that. I was I fought them for 18 years, and I got retroactive. I got retroactive and honored.
Wonderful.
And we went to the Supreme Military Court with the three judges in front of me, and they said, we want to let you know that we apologize for what happened to you, and we honor you today. See, I went in, and then they threw me out like trash and dishonored me. Now my dishonor is from dishonor to honorably discharged. I'm 100% total out. So, like I said, with the devil meant for bad, God turned that thing into good. He said he would restore what the cake of one took from you, and he done that, and still doing it today. You know, what am I doing today?
I'm very proud of you. I am so proud of you. I really am. I'm just so proud of you.
Thank you.
Because you went through hell on earth, okay? And
yeah.
And you fought your way all the time. You kept yourself together. You may have had some suicidal ideations. I did that also. I think when you get too abused, mm-hmm. that's what you think of. I just want to be dead. I want to be dead.
Absolutely.
I don't want to live like this. And,
but
you made it through. You made it through.
Absolutely.
And then you fought the battle, man. You fought the battle even with the military, and you made it through. And, yeah, I do remember CNN in 2010. Yes, I do. And I'll see if I can look that up later just for the heck of it.
It's in the archive. You can find it at the library. You just look up, go into CNN, pull up 2010, call the whistleblowers, and there's me and two other women. It was
there
an hour-long interview and stuff. It was powerful. But we broke through and made God use me. Not it ain't got nothing to do with me. God used me to triumph and what happened to me and get restored and get my name cleared and then be retroactive and get reimbursed.
Thank God.
And then to help other military personnel people, men and women, who have suffered sexual assault in the military now. It's not a hush-hush thing anymore. We open that door for them to get what they deserve, you know?
Good.
Yeah.
That's why I'm just so proud of you in so many ways. And certainly people could contact you who maybe went through similar circumstances in the military, and you'd be able to guide them. Because
God, Carol, I help hundreds of people. God has used me to help hundreds, thousands of men and women who went through similar or the same what I went through and was thrown out and got dishonorably discharged, tried to commit suicide. Now they're honorable.
Yeah.
I showed them how to do it. I am on the 10 most wanted list on the military, but ain't nothing they can do about it. My stuff is sealed, and it's for the rest of my life. I have 100% disablement that it cannot be reversed, and that's what they hate. It cannot be reversed. So, yes, I help other people. You know, that's why I tell people, if you know anyone who has went through a trauma in the military, I can lead them to where they need to go, get the right paperwork to get it started, and you can receive what you are due. And I don't care if it was 20 years back. There's no expiration date on abuse in the military.
That's
a good thing about that.
That's right. And that's the way it should be with everything, with abuse. You know, there shouldn't be any statute of limitations. No.
There's statute for child abuse, but there's no statute for any abuse in the military. If you suffer a trauma, and I don't care if it was 20 years ago, but you can prove it, you can get retroactive.
That's perfect.
Absolutely.
That's wonderful.
God has used me to help so many people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and let God be the glory, you know. So, you know, what I went through has not been in vain. And I'm going to throw some stuff out there. I'm not going to go into too much detail because there's like 15 minutes left, and I do want to tell people what I'm doing today. But
this
I also
went so
need to let
fast.
People know
Holy
that I'm not,
go ahead.
Only
go ahead.
A, I'm not only a survivor of sexual child abuse. I'm also a survivor of domestic violence. I'm a survivor of human trafficking. I'm a survivor of kidnapping. I went through all that, too. You know,
yes,
I'm a survivor of drugs, and I've been clean for, oh my God, going on 30 years. So as far as that, so I went through a lot in my life. You know, I tried to commit suicide. I stopped counting that over 30 times. You know, it's been 36 times. Like people say, oh my God. But I'm still in my right mind. I'm still here because, see, when I didn't think no one loved me and I didn't even care about myself, there's a God that I serve today who never stopped loving me and who never took his hand off me and kept me in my right mind. Stand boldly to share my story.
Michelle, you went from the darkness to the light. That's what you did.
Out of the darkness.
And I try to work with some people that are in the dark and get them into the light. But they have
mm-hmm.
to want it, too. You know what I'm saying? Something has to happen.
Okay.
You know, they have to
mm-hmm.
want it. So
mm-hmm.
talk about what you're doing today. I mean, my God, you go into prisons.
Okay.
You do all kinds of stuff. And I want people to hear this because we are running out of time. It went so fast.
So I went from a devil worshiper to a worshiper of Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior, who sits on the right-hand side of God in heaven. He is who I serve today. And people say, because I used to be an atheist. So you couldn't even say the name of him without me screaming, you know. But God turned my life around when I was at my most darkest hour and my darkest point when I wanted to die, and I was literally trying to commit suicide. And God stepped in and showed me who he is. And he brought people in my life that serve him to bring me to where I'm at today. And so I went to college and I got my degree. I am a clinical counselor. I have five clients that I deal with. My youngest is 13 years old. I'm very grateful for that. I'm also a chaplain for the local jail and prison. I'm also an ordained and licensed minister for the church that I attend in Cincinnati. I live in Westchester, Ohio, so my church is in Cincinnati. The jail that I go to is a jail, local jail in Cincinnati that I'm a chaplain at. And I not only go to that jail, but I also do a jail ministry in East Louisville, Kentucky, the Pee Wee Valley Correctional for Women. And I'm very grateful for that, you know. I also minister and volunteer at safe houses for domestic violence for women. So I also minister to homeless people. I minister to drug dealers, drug users, homosexuals and lesbians, wherever God leads me as far as my street ministry, and I run into them all. Homeless people, you know, alcoholics, you know, they need love. You'd be surprised of people that's out here homeless that used to have a six-figure job and had a house with a white picket fence and a dog named Toto. And then just in one snap, they lost everything, and now they're eating out of garbage cans. And let me say this, that I used to be homeless. I used to sleep in abandoned buildings. I used to sleep on park benches, and I used to eat out of garbage cans. And so when I share this story when I'm out here, these people will look me cry and say, there is no way. I mean, you sharing our story because that means you have to be out in the trenches to understand, but they say, you don't look like that. And I said, and that's when I bring in God and said, because it wasn't me who turned my life around, it was God, you know. And even though it was so long ago that this happened to me, I can remember it as if it was yesterday. So I love communicating and helping people. You know, I wake up in the morning and give praises and glory to the Lord, and then I ask him to use me and guide me and lead me to wherever he want me to minister to. And so I always keep change in my car, you know, dollars in my car, because I'm always seeing homeless people. I'm always giving. I remember one time I had a couple of Christians that was around me, and I was giving to a homeless person. They said, you don't want to give that person money. They can go get a job, or they probably going to take that money and go get high or something. First of all, I ain't got nothing to do with what they're going to go do with it.
That's
okay?
Right.
Because God is looking at what you going to do out here, what you doing to be observant. So I remember when I was out there homeless and begging for change. If I got it, which I always do, I'm going to give. I'm going to give. So I don't get my reward from people. I get my reward from God, because it's God. He looks down. He sent his angels to write down everything you do and say. He wants to see and know where your heart is at. So my heart is a giver. I love to give and to help other people because I understand that pain. I understand that loneliness. I understand that sadness. Even though I praise God that I'm not in that anymore, that I have been healed and delivered and set free, I understand. He gave me also the gift to, I literally feel people's pain. So I literally would just feel and know. He would show me things in the spirit realm. I'm not a person that pushed God down no one's throat. I'm not a Bible thumper, but I am a servant of God, and I know he's real. And I don't just have a relationship with Jesus. I have a personal and intimate relationship with him. So I'm not ashamed to speak about who he is and who I serve. I came from being an atheist to a devil worshiper to now a Jesus worshiper.
There you go.
Hallelujah.
I'm glad to hear that, Michelle. You made the right choices. And you know what? It is about choices, too, okay? Because, we know when we're doing bad, okay? We know when we've done bad. And we're going to do bad because we're sinners, okay? But, you know, if we really repent and if we're sorry for it and we learn from it, then we don't do it again, whatever it might be, okay, then you've learned something. So you did have quite a journey because you were in the dark, heavy in the dark, because that's the way you were brought up. That's what you saw. This is what you saw and this is what you went through. And then you made that decision, honey. You made that decision. You got into the light. And with all the ministries, you know, that you're a part of. I mean, I've been on the streets too. You know, you know my story, and I've been places where I shouldn't have been. And I think back to myself, my God, what was I doing there? I didn't know myself what I was doing there. I'm thinking to myself, but I see it and I can testify about it. Okay, I know what I saw. Okay, But with a person like you, your story is so horrific, okay? Now, we don't take, like I say, we don't take measuring sticks to people come on NASCAR. Yes, there's some of us who have horrible stories to tell. And then there are those that have moderate, and then those that, should I come on? It only happened once. One time is too many.
That's right.
It's not supposed to happen at all. Can we stop it? No. But what we can do is we can educate, okay, educate the people, educate, you know, the society, our communities. I want to get more involved with the communities if we can breathe the damn air, okay, excuse my mouth, but, you know, I mean, come on, where's it coming from? Now, it came from China, and it's all over the place, I don't know. But the point is this, you know, if we educate people, and certainly our children, the ones that come from homes where parents, you know, care about their children, I hate to put it that way, you know, then they can educate, you know, and keep them, you know, on the straight and narrow. Okay, there's one for you, the straight and narrow. I used to work for an organization called the Straight and Narrow, and that was in Perth Amboy, and believe I saw a lot of things. But, you know, the point is, you know, Michelle, you're like a miracle lady, okay? You are, because I know from where you came and I know from where you are now, where you stand straight tall and you're able to talk to anyone. And this is why so many of us, you know, have so many different types of things that we experience in life. I never blamed God. Because I know that God, like I say, and you like to say, and other people like it too, God does not make junk. We turn into junk. A lot of the things that we do that are wrong, it's our choice to do that, okay? Do we have to forgive ourselves? Yes, because if we came from homes like yours, or maybe like mine, or like we have several other people that came on NASCAR that were horrific, there are some horrific stories.
Yes, it is.
What we're going to make terrible mistakes along the way. But on the other hand, if we go to the light, okay, if we make the right choices, get out of the darkness, go to the light, and do the right thing, we have seen all those things in the past, and then we can use that to help all the people here in the present. Okay?
I mean, people got to understand when you go through hell like that, and people came when they said, well, it happened when you was a kid, get over it. How dare you? If you ain't experienced abuse, then you have no clue and no idea what that feels like.
Oh.
And how about when it starts as a child? You're innocent and you look for adults to protect you.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yes. And there is a difference. What you said before is so spot on because, you see, there is a difference in being, like, getting slapped in the face, which isn't right, but getting slapped in the face by a parent, whatever. But then there's the beatings, Yeah, where blood, my legs used to be bad too.
I'm talking about blood gushing out. That's right, Carol.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I know, you know, I know your story.
I know, that's why I understand you so well. But, you know, there's people out there that maybe you've opened up their eyes tonight to the true horror of what parents can do to their children. And, you know, it's a horrible world that we live in. We can make it a better world. If we can bring more light into the world. But right now we're going through, there's a lot of evil out there. And that is why we're so topsy-turvy. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I believe that God is stronger than the devil, okay? Remember, Lucifer was the fallen angel. He was the fallen angel. Why would I worship the fallen angel?
He was, when his name was Lucifer, he was one of the most beautiful angels in heaven.
That's
He hates choir. He hates music. He hates us humans. He's called us monkeys. He know why? Because he can never go back to heaven. He's in hell now, and his end is the lake of fire. That's why he go to and fro to see who he can devour. He's a liar. He's a father of lies. He's a thief. He's a con artist. He's a manipulator. He don't believe or feel or know anything about love, peace, happiness. He's evil, darkness, negative. So I tell people, how can you distinguish the difference? Here's how. If anytime you hear something in your ear telling you to go harm yourself, that ain't God.
That's
if you hear anything in your ear telling you to do, to cause harm or think about the past or hold on to it or hurt yourself, that ain't God. God is about love, peace.
That's right. But you see, I've got to end the show, but let me just say one thing. Remember, it says in the Bible, I read it from page one all the way through, many of us have, but the road to heaven is a very narrow road.
It is.
Okay.
That's right.
So too many of us are making poor choices. But I just want to thank you so much for coming on, you know, the show tonight, okay, because I wanted people to hear what you walked through and see where you are now, okay?
Yes.
Because it shows that you can be where you were and here you are today now. And all those horrible experiences, all those horrible experiences that many of us go through, you know, but even some of, like I said, Michelle, you're like number one or something, I don't know, you know, with the horrible experiences. Doesn't matter. You don't need a number. We don't need a yardstick. But the point is this. The point is this. We can use our experiences to help people today. And that's what's so important.
That's right. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
And that's what I do.
And that's what you do. And I thank you for everything that you do.
I always ask people, let's go. Where's the solution? What's the solution? What are we doing today? Giving God glory and tearing down them demons and everything in hell.
That's the walls
of hell scream when I wake up every morning.
That's right.
Said, oh, my God.
Well, let me tell you what.
That's right.
Let me tell you what.
Do God's will.
I think you blew Blog Talk away. I didn't even get the 90-second cue yet. Now, wait a minute.
Actually, you got two more minutes with it. It's 9:28. You got 2 minutes.
Do we have one more minute? You know my computer's off. No one can fix that either, by the way.
You got two.
We got 2 minutes?
Yes, it's 9:28. Go ahead.
Okay.
All
I can say, everyone out there who listens, there it goes, by gosh. All right. I wanted you to hear Michelle's story. Because it can show again that you can, you know, be in the darkness and you think that that's cool. Okay, that's cool. And you have all these spells that you think you cast. No, it doesn't work that way. It really doesn't. When Michelle went through her lifetime, okay, when she went through her lifetime and was so terribly beaten, most people would have ended their life, okay, but she kept right on going. Even in the military, she was used. And look at her today. She's all over the place. And she is a minister. Mm-hmm. She is a counselor. She's a certified counselor, okay? And, you know, anytime you need help, she's on the contact list. If you need help with the military, she's with that too. So, you know,
just call me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's right there
mm-hmm.
on the contact list on our NASCAR website. So thank you so much. I do have to end the show now. I got to turn it off.
Yes.
But thank you so
yes.
much for coming on, honey. You did a great job. And I knew I didn't have to talk too much because I knew that you'd know what to say. There you go. So,
yeah,
yes,
I love you, sister girl.
Excuse
me.
I
love you, sister girl.
I love you, too. Okay, good night now, and thank you so much. God
You're
bless.
You're welcome. God bless.
Blog Talk Radio.